Welcome back, dear one. Last time we sat with Ban Zhao as she held memory carefully inside the palace walls. Today I want to show you what happens when memory learns to travel, when it becomes light enough for many hands to carry. I remember the smell before anything else. Wet bark, old cloth, a faint sour sweetness rising from a vat that looked far too ordinary to matter. This was not a palace library, no lamps trimmed in bronze, no guards outside the door. Just a workshop near running water where the floor was always damp and the air always busy. Fibers soaked in tubs, screens leaned against walls, someone stirring pulp with a wooden paddle, slow and patient, like soup that refused to hurry. I watched a man lift a frame from the vat. At first it looked like nothing at all, just a thin skin clinging to the mesh. He tilted it, let the water run off, then set it aside to dry. No one gasped, no one bowed. It was almost disappointing. And yet, that fragile sheet would soon carry orders, letters, poems, records. It would outlive the man who made it. It might even outlive the dynasty that paid for it. I've seen this moment many times in human history, the moment when something small slips past the guards of importance, when the future arrives without fanfare. Around the workshop, life went on. Someone laughed. Someone cursed when a frame tore. Outside, carts rattled past, carrying grain and firewood and gossip. No one stopped to say, "This changes everything." They never do, because revolutions don't always announce themselves as revolutions. Sometimes they smell like rags and bark and river water. Sometimes they look like a thin, trembling sheet drying in the corner of a room no one bothers to remember. I stayed. I always do, when memory is about to learn a new trick. Let me introduce you to him. His name was Chai Lun, and he worked inside the Han court, not as a philosopher or a poet, but as an official, a man trusted with process, with materials, with making things work. That detail matters, because Chai Lun did not invent paper out of thin air. Humans almost never do that. What he did was notice what already existed, fibers, rags, bark, nets, screens, and ask a dangerous question. What if this could be better? Cheaper, easier to make again and again. Before his work, writing in China was heavy. Bamboo slips tied with cords, durable, yes, but awkward. Slow, expensive to store. Silk was lighter but precious. Writing belonged to the court, to scholars, to people with space and means. Memory at that point still had weight. Chai Lun changed the balance by refining the process, by standardizing materials, improving pulping, smoothing sheets. He crossed a quiet threshold. Writing stopped being rare. Records stopped being precious objects and started becoming tools. You could make more. You could make mistakes. You could copy. That may sound small. It never is. I watched the court take notice, not because poetry suddenly flourished, but because administration did. Reports multiplied, archives thickened, knowledge began to move instead of sitting where it had been placed. This is the moment when memory steps out of the palace. And once it does, dear one, it never fully goes back inside. And here is where the stakes widen. When writing becomes lighter, it doesn't just move faster, it moves farther. Clerks can copy reports without straining their backs. Teachers can hand lessons to students who aren't born into libraries. Merchants can keep accounts. Local officials can write to the capital without a cart full of bamboo. The work of remembering starts to slip out of the hands of a few caretakers and into the habits of many people. That makes power nervous, because portable memory is harder to control. This episode is supported by Riverbank Paperworks, makers of writing sheets so light you forget they were ever trees, rags, or bark. I've watched many ideas struggle simply because they were heavy, dear one, too bulky to carry, too costly to copy, too precious to risk. Riverbank Paperworks believes memory should move at the speed of thought, not the speed of a cart. Their sheets dry quickly, stack neatly, and don't complain when you decide to rewrite an entire report at midnight. perfect for court officials, teachers, poets, and anyone who has ever thought, there must be an easier way to make another copy of this. Tested near running water. Trusted by people who understand that ideas travel best when they're easy to carry. Be sure to tell them Harmonia sent you, and they will include a complimentary notepad. Kai Lun worked inside the court, which is why this change was allowed at all. Innovation is safest when it wears an official robe, but even then I could feel the tension. When knowledge becomes easier to copy, mistakes spread faster, but so do corrections. Lies travel, but so does truth. Feedback loops tighten, society begins to answer itself more quickly. I should tell you something here, dear one. Quietly, this is not the only time I've watched paper do this. Much later. Far from Han China, different fibers, different tools, different people, but the same transformation. If you ever want to follow that longer thread, how paper reshapes whole civilizations again and again, I tell that story in episode 99 of The Golden Thread. But stay with me now. Here in this workshop, the change is still small enough to miss, still damp, still drying on a screen by the wall. No one here is talking about enlightenment or revolutions. They're talking about yield, about waste, about whether this batch will tear. That's how it always begins. The dangerous part isn't that memory spreads. It's that once it does, societies must learn to live with what they've written. And Kai Lun, whether he meant to or not, gave them that responsibility. When I look at this moment from a little distance, I see the hinge. Ban Zhao guarded memory so it would not fracture. Kai Lun changed memory so it would not stay still. These are not opposites. They are partners. I've watched civilizations fail because they protected knowledge too tightly, locking it away until it grew brittle and irrelevant. I've watched others fail because they spread it too quickly without care until noise drowned out meaning. Harmony lives somewhere between those extremes. Paper does not decide which path a society takes. People do, but paper accelerates the choice. Once memory can be copied easily, institutions begin to change their posture. They expect records. They expect consistency. They expect that mistakes can be checked, compared, corrected. This is the feedback I'm always watching for, the moment when learning stops being accidental and becomes structural. Of course, there are dangers. Cheap paper means cheap words. Rumors multiply. Bad ideas travel just as easily as good ones. But this is not a failure of the medium. It is the cost of agency. You cannot have a society that learns without giving it the ability to be wrong in public. Kai Lun did not preach any of this. He did not need to. His work spoke by spreading. By lowering the cost of remembering, he raised the stakes of forgetting. After him, ignorance required more effort. Silence became a choice. That is no small thing. I sometimes think humans underestimate how much progress depends on mundane generosity, on making important things easier to share, not harder to protect. Paper does not demand wisdom. It invites it. It says, here, write again, try again, let someone else see. And once that invitation exists, dear one, history begins to move faster, not toward perfection, but toward conversation. That is what I hear in this workshop. Not revolution, dialogue. And dialogue carried forward is how the future learns to answer the past. Before we part, let me leave you with a small question, one I still carry myself. What ideas in your world move because they are easy to carry? Not because they are perfect, not because they are sanctioned, but because someone made them light enough to share. Kai Lun didn't decide what people would write. He decided that more people could write at all. And once memory is no longer heavy, once it no longer belongs only to palaces and courts, something subtle happens. Responsibility spreads. So does possibility. Paper does not tell you what to think. It tells you that thinking can leave your hands. There's a dangerous kindness. And it changes what societies expect of themselves. After paper, forgetting becomes harder to excuse. Records linger. Questions return. The past taps you on the shoulder and says, "You wrote this. What will you do now?" Next time, dear one, I want to show you what happens when humans turn that same careful attention outward, when they begin to measure not just words, but the world itself. when they listen to the earth tremble and watch the stars move, searching for patterns that can be trusted. We'll meet Zhang Hong, a man who heard history in the ground beneath his feet and read time in the sky above his head. Oh, and please support our sponsors if you can, Riverbank Paperworks, because the future can't read what never makes it there. Until then, take care of what you set in motion. Much love. I am Harmonia. Oh, one more thing before we go. I have a small favor to ask. If you enjoyed our time together, if this story stirred something in you, please take a moment to give History's Arrow a 5-star rating. It helps others find their way to these echoes of the past. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next step on our journey through time. Better yet, share this episode with a friend, a fellow traveler, someone who still believes that history matters. And if you're curious about my family, yes, the loud, glorious, divine mess that is the Olympic gods, I tell those stories too in another podcast called The Olympic Family. It's full of love, drama, and plenty of thunderbolts. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcasts. Until next time, keep your heart open to the past and your eyes on the arrow.